We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. We're back and we're here to discuss a 3-1 thumping of Liverpool at Arsenal, their second defeat of the season. They said the first one was unjustified, asked for replays. They weren't asking for any replays from this one, Neil. There would be no point. The score flattered them anyway. I'm here with my regular Neil Shah. How are you doing, Neil?
I'm good, Jack. I'm good. I mean, just sitting back in my armchair watching you tweet away, having a lovely exchange with all your Liverpool fans. It's great.
I've got the Liverpool fans. You know, you've always got a fan base that you have, a group of friends that have, you know, you're like, oh, we need to win. My brother has it with Tottenham. Obviously, you know, where we live is a bit more of a Tottenham infested area, and you know, and he seems to have that. So I can tell he's super. He doesn't even want to watch those games, you know. But he knows he's going to get a lot of grief. And I feel that a little bit with Liverpool. And they were constantly texting me pre-game. What I was getting a lot of was, this player's out for us. This player's out for us. Yeah. Oh, you're the favourites. You're this. And I didn't really respond too much. I just was like, okay, sure. What am I going to say to that? You know, they were, you know, 5 points clear. But deep down, I think, Neil, we all knew as an Arsenal fan base, with the points we dropped in December, this was a game that we saw on the horizon that we had to win if we wanted to still have a say in the title race. And from their perspective, you know, perhaps they didn't need to win it, but they certainly, you know, Liverpool, as we know, they're not coming to sit back or set up for a draw or anything like that. But absolutely massive game. My brother was there, but I could hear through the, you rarely can feel it, the atmosphere through the TV, but this was one of those that you really feel it. Just before we go over some of the sort of post-game analysis and things like that, and then get into our analysis of the game, Neil, overview after the result, when we fought, your third went in, Trossard scored, that sort of sense of relief. I was, even though they were down to 10 men at that point, I was dreading the last 7 or 8 minutes, to be honest. And when Trossard scored, I just had this huge weight lifted off my shoulders. But Neil, overriding sort of thoughts and feelings, we're now you're back 2 points behind. I guess it's 3 points of City win their game in hand, but we're right amongst it again. You must be sort of, you know, overjoyed at that point, not done anything yet, but to really sort of put our foot back in there.
Well, of course, you know, it would have been 8 points, which I think, even with my optimism, is a bridge too far. It really was it feels, and it is, a monumental gap when you're looking at teams like City and Liverpool and the way they play and the runs they can put together, the momentum that they start to form. And I think 8 points would have been way too far. Even a draw, I think, would have been again, you know, it's just too big a gap, especially with City then at that point having two games in hand. I thought, no, it has to be a win. And, you know, thankfully that's how it transpired. And now, yeah, I'm just calling it 3 points because I think you can bet your bottom dollar that it will most likely win their final game in hand. So 3 points behind them, which is a loss, isn't it? It's all it is. It's a loss. I think the other thing we've got to focus on now, that now we're back in the thick of it, we just focus on and think about our games and what we do. It's very easy to get caught up in what the other two teams are doing and who they're going to play and where they're going to drop points. And at the end of the day, that's all great, but I think we need to just focus on us. And, you know, as you just said before, you press the record button, coming back from the break, that's 3 wins in a row. We've got a little bit of momentum behind us, 10 goals, 2 conceded. I don't think we can ask for more, especially the run that we had before that. It was awful, wasn't it? You know, after getting dumped out of the FA Cup, and just things went wrong after Christmas. We were top at Christmas, weren't we? And then look what happened. It was awful.
Yeah,
I think at one point, if I might be wrong, but I think we had a chance to go for 4 or 5 clear, I think, if I've got that right. And then all of a sudden, we're finding us looking at the 5-point gap, and it was so important. It was just so important to have that traction or regain that traction. And, you know, I think every game is difficult, Jack. If you look at the next few fixtures, they're winnable. They are winnable. If you play anything like that, they're definitely winnable. Right. So hopefully we could have a good spell in the next 4 to 5 weeks. And then obviously we've got Champions League to contend with as well. But I mean, I would have bitten your arm off for this to be in this position at this stage. So yeah, it's good for me, I think.
Yeah, post Dubai, I mean, there was this block of sort of three. I don't usually look at blocks of fixtures, but there was certainly a block of sort of three fixtures leading up to this one. And you felt you had to win those first two, which we did to make this one a really significant game. Where both sides knew that, you know, a result either way would sort of change maybe the proceedings a little bit. And I thought we really went out showing that we just wanted to win it more. We wanted to win it more from the start. I thought we were the dominant team from start to finish, really. I mean, the data bears that out. The data says it was a 3.7 to 0.4 game. So basically what it says was the score did flatter them. It was more of a 4-0 game than a 3-1 game, to be honest. And I think that's true, really. When you look at the big chances, I think we had 4 big chances that we created in the game, which we'll get to. And you've never seen, I mean, Liverpool, this is a Liverpool team. I think they're the best attacking unit so far this season in the league. They've out, you know, broken records recently against teams like Newcastle and Chelsea for the amount of shots on goal and things like that and creation. And we limited them to one shot on target from 30 yards. And it wasn't the goal they scored from, because the goal they scored from was an own goal. And but other than that, it was what they always do, which is shots from distance, but shots from distance that really didn't trouble us at all, really.
It's funny, we did them to City. We limited them, didn't we, as well?
Yeah, and the weird thing with City is they had 4 total shots as opposed to Liverpool's 10. But what we always know about Liverpool, I said this again when they played against Man United at home as well. I think someone said, wow, they had like 34 shots. And I went, yeah, but if you watch them, they are a shoot on sight team. They literally, anywhere around the box, Klopp just tells them to shoot. Just, it doesn't matter if even the shot is on, just whack it and get a shot off. And his belief there is kind of like volume. Something will bounce off of someone to somewhere. I don't find that particularly attractive to watch. City are more like us. They won't take the shot unless it's a perfect opportunity. It could be a bit frustrating from a fan's perspective, but they play in that sort of way, not the sort of chaos way. So I find that quite interesting. But no, like you know, I thought it was fantastic performance. Obviously, before we sort of analyse like how we set up, there's always this narrative that comes after the game. I found it very funny, and I knew it was going to be this case. You did too. We knew what the narrative was going to be, that you know, they were going to look at Arsenal and sort of blame the post game jubilee celebrations and things like that, which was, as far as I'm concerned, extremely mild. Like, I mean, it was, I don't know what you're expecting from sort of, you know, a last minute goal to seal it in terms of the third one against the team that's currently top of the league, with us, you know, competing right up there. Completely natural reaction. I want to get your thoughts on it. My two thoughts, I don't really want to go into the details on the pundits that do it. I do think it's a really good way to eradicate who's a serious pundit and who's not, though. If pundits are going to evaluate this game where we've got all this data to go on, that we've like limited this team that's never been limited all season, really, to so little in front of goal, and their analysis is, well, I think, you know, Arteta's over celebrating and so are the players, and they're getting a bit ahead of themselves. I think it's just such poor analysis. So I think it's a really good way to just go, these are idiots and we don't need to listen to those people anymore, because they're just doing it. And I also think, I definitely think they're doing it for effect. I definitely think they know that Arsenal fans are the biggest on social media and they're going to get baited into sort of reacting to it. And we do react to it. Even I react to it. Of course we do. But I do think the worst part of it, and there's obviously, I've always believed there's sort of an anti-Arsenal agenda in the media anyway. And I think the reason that's sort of mellowed out in recent years is because we've not been as good. As soon as we get to the level again, it all comes flooding back, just like it did in the years where we were competing with United under Arsene Wenger and things like that. But I do think it filters down to the refs, really, and you know, the on the field stuff, the PGML, because I think they're quite weak. I think they're basically built very, very weak, and they hear this stuff, and it creates sort of like a, I don't know, a prejudice towards the manager and towards the team. And I think that's where you see our manager getting booked for ridiculous things, just celebrating on the touchline, when we've seen The likes of Mourinho do knee slides into corner flags. The likes of Fergie run on the field like he's a dancing, you know, daddy long legs. The likes of Jurgen Klopp run into centre circles mid-game. And they've all been lauded for these sorts of celebrations. And if you look at what Mikel Arteta has done this season and what he's been punished for, like against Luton and things like that, it's so mild in comparison. So I do think it filters down, and that's my biggest concern. But I think overall it's just really lazy, poor analysis. I'm so unimpressed by the post-game analysis, bar really match of the day too, that I thought Murphy and co did a decent job of analysing why we were so much better than Liverpool. But what's your thoughts on it, Neil, on the whole sort of lazy celebration police analysis kind of thing?
Well, I think you've hit it on the nail on the head with what you've just said. I think it's some excellent points, and I completely believe in that. I really do. What you've said, I think it's spot on. But for me, I am not surprised. You just know that they're gonna be. It's like they're just clutching at straws just to have digs at us. I think we're so disliked for whatever reason. It could well be that it's not a dislike. It's because they know they're going to get the attention from having a go at Arsenal, because they know that they're going to get millions of fans back on bang on their case, and they probably love it. You know, they do it. I mean, you've got Carragher changing his profile pic to Odegaard. I mean, it's how childish can you be? For me, it's a complete, like, exactly what you said, in the back of what you said. You really have to question their intellect. You really do. If they have just watched arguably one of the biggest games of the season, isn't it, in the Prem fixture anyway, and a really good game actually, full of high quality, a team that has, again, arguably one of the best teams in Europe at the moment, being completely and utterly schooled, tactically, you know, skillfully, everything, all the strategies which were probably put into place by Arteta, everything working fluidly, really. You know, I was talking about that balance. We had an attacking prowess last season and probably more defensive dominance this season. Why can't we get that balance right? I think we've got that balance right in this game. I thought this game was the perfect example of that. And what do they talk about? Why is Odegaard taking a picture of the cameraman? Why is Arteta doing this, and why are they celebrating like they've just won the league? They've just got 3 points. Yeah, and Gary Neville says, well, they're probably celebrating a bit more because of the fact that they didn't drop 3 points and more than they won it, and you know, they're only 2 points. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Why can't you talk about what you saw on the pitch, the skill of the players, the mentality of the players and all that, and you had on Sky anyway? I mean, the two platforms I watched, the Match of the Day, which you just mentioned, and Sky. And it's Arsenal v Liverpool, and we just had one Arsenal representative in Gael Clichy, and he was trying his best, to be fair, to say all these things. And they were just like, yeah, but, you know, they were just like literally trying to shut him up and talk about this stuff. And you're thinking, Gary Neville, how many times have you won the Prem, and how many trophies have you won? And, you know, I mean, Spitboy, you've been part of, you know, one of the biggest teams ever in Europe, and this is what levels you're going down to. For me, I have to question their intellect and their stupidity. You've got Richard Keys and Chris Sutton and all of them all jumping on the bandwagon and coming out with utter garbage. And I just can't see how they are still getting time and airtime on TV. And I think you boys mentioned it in the WhatsApp group. They've fallen behind the times. You know, they're from maybe the older, as we know, football has evolved a lot, hasn't it? It's really evolved. And I think they don't have a clue. They really don't have a clue with how it's changed, and they're still talking about rubbish like this. It's farcical. To be honest now, I find it funny. I just laugh at it. And yeah. if we're giving the attention, great, because fine, we're the ones in the spotlight. Wonderful.
Yeah, when Roy Keane is the voice of reason when it comes to Arsenal, that says it all, doesn't it, really? It says it all. You're watching going, well, Roy Keane is the voice of reason, the guy that grew up throughout his career hating Arsenal because we were his biggest rival. He knew that, you know, for anything to be won in his era, he'd have to overcome us. And he is the voice of reason here saying, hold on a second, this is maybe we should sort of analyse the game a little bit. But they're not allowed to because the two Beavis and Butthead blokes are going to go at each other and come up. They're just looking for they're just trying to bait people. I think I don't truly think they believe it because I don't think Carragher and Neville are that unintelligent deep down. So I think they are baiting, to be honest. So that's why I don't want to give it too much time. But I do find it hilarious that before the game, I kind of saw a little clippets before the game and it was, Arsenal, if they've got to win it to stay in it. And then once we won it, they went, well, actually, I think it's better for Man City. Let's talk about that. And I was like, I went, well, that's not what you're here to do. Tomorrow night, Man City play. You can talk about how they've benefited from it then when they win their game, which they did. But that night, what people are tuning in for is I want an analysis on how this team has dominated a team that's not been dominated all season, really, and limited them to so few shots. Let's be honest, in two games, really, at Anfield, they were relatively limited too, other than a couple. And how have they done it against Manchester City as well? That's what it really should have been about. And that was unfortunate that it wasn't. But from our perspective, we're here to provide that sort of proper objective analysis, of course, like we always do. But it was really interesting, wasn't it? I mean, we started, Jesus was out, and I think we'll come back to that. I have some concerns about that. Over the longevity. He had swelling on his knee last week, and from my perspective, swelling on the knee, the way he mentioned it kind of made it sound like it was within the knee joint. That's not a good sign, especially with his history. So I know he says days and things like that. I get this sort of lingering feeling that this might be a sort of reoccurring theme from now until the end of the season with Gabriel Jesus. And to be honest, I'm not telling anyone things that they may not already be thinking themselves, because Gabriel Jesus has had quite a long history with us and knee injury. So, but he picked Havertz again, and I think we might have found something there. So I want to go into that, but let's go into the start of the game. Now, from the first few minutes when Raya threw the ball out to Martinelli, and we could see, wasn't it? And he did Kanyate for pace, which I've not seen before. I've not seen Kanyate's right up there with the best of them in terms of Saliba, like in terms of defensive pace, and whips the ball into Saka, which maybe he should have scored from. I think he had a little nudge on his back from Joe Gomez. But from that moment, you knew that, well, we were bang up for this game, didn't you, really? And we were so on the front foot, Neil, and I thought the balance was fantastic. Did you?
Yeah, I think that break has actually done all the players good, but more so some of them, especially players like Martinelli. It's given him a new lease of life. He's got that electric energy and dynamism about him back, I think. And yeah, his pace was stunning on that particular run, absolutely stunning. But I have to give credit to Raya. I think I mentioned it in the last couple of pods with you that I've started to warm to him. But I really saw, I was probably so at ease with him against Liverpool, who are, what, one of the most prolific attacking sides there is. And I was utterly comfortable with him. I think that's a lot to do with how we set up and we just limited them to rubbish, you know, far afield shots. But at the end of the day, when the ball did go in the box, he just had such good command of it. It was about two or three occasions where he just leapt up high and he just gathered the ball without any trouble at all and just looked so calm. But that particular incident, that he gathered it and immediately released it, great distribution. So credit to Rare as well. And I wanted just to make sure that he got a nod and a mention in the pod. I thought that was fantastic work by him. But then, yeah, after that, the Martinelli run was just electrifying. It was so, so significant because that set the tone for what he was going to do pretty much for all the time he was on that pitch. And, yeah, I mean, look, I think maybe on another day, Saka would have just buried that. And it was a shame because it would have been a really good goal. It would have been, reminded me of the olden days where we used to be so quick on the counter and would score within seconds. And I think that literally would have been seconds, maybe 10, 12 seconds at the most. And it would have been a really lovely goal to see early doors. And Martinelli has a habit of being involved or scoring early goals against Liverpool, isn't he? It's it's become a bit of a habit with him. I always think that Klopp is so jealous of Arsene Martin, and he's always liked him. I think he's always wanted him secretly. And I just thought that set the tone for the rest of the game. And I think it just made Liverpool, or the defence certainly, think, oh God, we're in for a bit of a busy day today. So it was great. It's just that one moment was a great start for me. And I thought, yeah, we're in this. Let's do it.
And that was really a knock-on effect from what we saw in the first game on the return against Palace, when Raya released Jesus and into Trossard, and that goal, and Arteta went crazy, didn't he? And you could tell he was super happy about that transition. And ever since then, we've really seen this desire from Raya to get the ball early and get it out early. And really, we've become, I think after that Palace game, we did an analysis on it, and we said we are so ready to be more of a transitional team from back to front. We've got the players in Martinelli and Saka at wide to do it at pace, and we don't do it enough. That's what really we were talking about. And then there you see it again, like two or three times in this game, in a really big game, and it really hurts them. And you're right, I mean, Martinelli, I mean, to be honest, Trent Alexander-Arnold must absolutely hate playing against us in these games, because I know he had a bit of joy against us at Anfield, but generally speaking, Martinelli absolutely rinses the guy. He was off at 60 minutes again. I can't see how that was tactical, to be honest. They needed a goal at that point. I think he might have come off at 2-1 or 1-1, but they it wasn't really a reason to bring him off. He was fantastic, Martinelli. He was relentless the whole game. I mean, I could see he was disappointed when we took him off, but he literally ran his socks off for 65, 70 minutes. So, yeah, I thought, yeah, from that moment, I was like, wow, we're going for him. We're going at him. And I think we won the ball 8 times in their defensive third. And that's what it felt like in the first half. It felt like a culmination of them just not being able to get out, us winning the ball really, really high up. But funny enough, the goal, which came on 12 or 13 minutes, what a move, Neil, for the goal. I mean, I didn't realise until I watched it back how good a move that was. I just saw Odegaard to Havertz and went crazy, you know. But when you watch it back, Neil, it's an amazing front-to-back goal. And we've played entirely through their press, which is amazing, because they are really, really effective at pressing, aren't they?
Oh, Jack, I mean, I've been lucky to witness some amazing team goals by Arsenal. And I think it's a shame. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a shame, because if Havertz actually had converted it, it would have been the perfect goal. I mean, it was damn good anyway. But if Havertz had actually converted that himself, then wow, it would have been up there for goal of the season for me. It really would have, because it started at the back. And I think it's the way we set up, the way we had Rice and Jorginho, and what an inclusion, by the way, what a masterstroke. He was fantastic. I mean, I think he got man of the match. I said it was a man of the match for me. But the way he set them up, and then in front of them, Odegaard and Havertz in a kind of box. And that's how they played. It was like a box in the middle of the park, going up and down, shifting up and down as to whether we had to do defensive duties or offensive duties. It was just brilliant to see that. And that's what formed part of that goal, I think. He had Saliba start it off doing some defensive duties, and then Jorginho, I think Gabriel got a touch. The quick movement and the passing was fantastic. And then Zinchenko got involved. Obviously, he only played half a game, but he got involved with actually coming in as he always does, laying it off to Odegaard, but then that was the pass, wasn't it? The Odegaard layoff was the icing on the cake for me. But again, his quick thinking and his Havertz, to be fair, he started at the back and then he moved forward. I don't know if you noticed that. He was coming from the back position and moving forward. So, you know, Havertz is getting criticism. And yes, I would say rightly so with respect to his finishing. He's not clinical. He's not a quick player. He can't turn fast. He doesn't do the Jesus change of directions. But what he does offer, Jack, I think it's working for us now. We were talking off air, I think, on WhatsApp. And, you know, I think playing that nine or being in that nine position really suits the way we play now. Because when Jesus isn't available and he's there, for me, he's a completely different. You could say he's the opposite player to Jesus in a way. But what he does do, he offers so much disruption and distraction, which allows our other frontline players to have a bit more freedom. Because obviously, then you've got to have the opposition defenders, maybe one or two of them, thinking about what he's doing. And look, let's not be fooled. He's a strong player. He's very, very strong. And I think he creates havoc for me. He really does. And that gives us new opportunities. But I think in that position, more so, it just suits his style of play or the kind of footballer he is for it to be effective. And it is. And it is. And the way he moved forward and he landed on, it was right in the right position for Odegaard's quick thinking. It was just great to see. But it was a beautiful goal to watch. If you watch it over, like you said, I didn't see it the first time either. Because I just saw the layout from Odegaard. Same, and I was like, I'm just wowed by that. But when you look it back, and I've watched it about four times now, I'm like, keep replaying it. I'm thinking, wow, that's a really lovely goal. And all right, we've got a little bit of luck. You know, Havertz didn't hit it cleanly and it hit the goalkeeper. We rallied right into Saka's feet, which is great. And that's good for him because I'm not worried about Saka's like little drop off. I really am not. I think he hasn't, last season, he was probably the best Saka we've seen so far. Yeah. But I give reason to that because I think last season he had more freedom with respect to opposition defenders. This season, well, at the tail end of last season, teams have come to realise that you need to put two or three defenders on him, either kick him off the park or just stifle him and suffocate him. So I don't think it's necessarily anything Saka's lack of or drop off from him. I think he's just finding it harder because of how the opposition teams are tending to set up to play against him. But, you know, the other thing from that is he's reached such a high level, even a 5 or 10% drop-off is quite significant, and maybe that's what's happened. I don't have any concerns with that, Jack. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll start seeing, when he's given the freedom, we'll start seeing the Saka that we all know and love from last season. And having said all of that, he's still getting the numbers. It's ridiculous. He's not going to never not get in the team. If he's fit, he'll play. Mm. It's as simple as that. Now, I know we need, you especially are looking at that guy from Wolves. And yeah, I mean, after you've been talking about him, I've been watching him and he's terrific. He's a natural, wonderful player. And he'd be perfect, wouldn't he, if he came in? And yeah. Absolutely. And I think it would give Saka a little bit of competition and it also would give him some breathing space and the rest time he needs. I think that would be such an amazing buy if we did get that. I don't normally speak about stuff like this, but I agree with you on that. I think that'd be amazing. But I think that will help him tremendously. And of course, it'd be amazing for the club, without a doubt. But yeah, he got the goal and that set us on our way. And it was a magnificent goal. Brilliant.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He did. He got the goal. And I think just going back onto the Havertz stuff, I think Mikel Arteta might have found something in these last two games against Liverpool. Because the first time, unless I'm mistaken, that he started Havertz in the nine was the FA Cup game against Liverpool, other than the Community Shield. I think it was the first time he actually started him in the nine. And before that, in all the big games, he'd either not started Havertz or started him at the eight. And I made the argument before this game to my brother, who's a big Havertz fan. I said, we can't start Havertz in the eight because we've never actually won a big game with him at the eight. And he made the argument that we beat Man United. And I said, yes, but against Man United, he gave the ball away for Rashford's goal and then got subbed off. And then we scored the two goals later on when he wasn't on the pitch. I don't really count that, to be honest. You know, we won it without him being in the eight, as far as I'm concerned. And my argument for a few weeks has been, every time I watch Havertz at the nine, he's just a nuisance to the other team. But at the eight, I think he's a nuisance to our own build-up play. And that was the way I was kind of mimicking it. And it's not really offensive to him. He just looks natural, more natural at the nine. And let's be honest, when people moan, I know his finishing's poor. And they go, well, he can't play him at the nine because his finishing is poor. Well, Jesus' finishing is poor. So there's no different there. What we're looking for is, and which what I think the FA Cup game actually proved to us was, what does he do to our players that are really the difference makers? Does he make them switch on? Does he open up opportunities for them? And what we saw in the FA Cup game, which was maybe even more dominant over 45 minutes than this one, was that he does. There was huge opportunities against Liverpool in that FA Cup game. I know we lost 2-0, but we were by far the better team for the first 60 minutes of that game. And people forget that, and I got all Liverpool fans going, oh, no, you know, we're always in control, blah, blah, blah. And I went, no, this game was very, very similar in terms of dominance, especially from an early onset point. I know they came back into it second half in the FA Cup. So I think we're not going to have, we don't have that striker that's going to, you know, finish things, you know, one chance, you know, out of one or whatever. And we don't have that. So what we're looking for is when Jesus is out, can we get the most out of our difference makers in our wide players? And I think so far in all the big games, Community Shield, the two games against Liverpool, he's proven that. And Arteta hopefully sits there and goes, well, if he's doing it in the biggest games from the nine, then that's got to be the way forward for him, you know? And I think we've got question marks over Jesus' fitness. And I hope personally that this game sort of set a reminder to Mikel Arteta, who got it spot on, that Kai Havertz is possibly a better option in the nine, and it opens up more options at midfield for the likes of Jorginho to play more, for the likes of Smith Rowe to play more, and it kind of, in that sense, thickens the squad, I think, because he says we're so thin, well, that's a way you thicken the squad without buying anyone, and I think that's a really good opportunity. Like you, I thought he just it was frustrating for the centre-backs. They always had to think about where he was. He's physical, 6'5". He gets stuck into him. He fights for every ball. And unlike Jesus, who can sometimes get... fights for everything, Jesus, but he can sometimes get eaten up by centre-backs too because he's not got that stature in it, and he drops into midfield a bit. Havertz is a bit more like your sort of post-up striker, you know? And... it kind of mimics a lot of things that maybe like a Giroud used to or someone like that. And I think it might even be someone that can really challenge Gabriel Jesus at the nine, to be honest. Possibly, if he continues to use him in that way. Because even before, when we've seen him do really well for us, it's kind of when he's taken up those positions, Brentford away, he kind of went into the nine. City at home kind of came on and fell into the nine, right? And because we needed goals in those games. So I think we really might have found something there. And I thought I was actually really impressed with how we produced from that. And I think, like you said on Saka, he's doing the numbers, isn't he? I think I'd like to see more from him in terms of his overall play. I think sometimes he looks a bit one-dimensional against his fullback and things like that. But like you said, if he's getting a goal or assist every game, you're not going to drop the player. And what's really great now is I think we found Martinelli again. His form has really come back since he's come back from Dubai, right? He's really looked like he's come back into some form. So hopefully that continues. But Neil, I mean, it was really a dominant first half where you did feel towards the end. We didn't create a ton of chances. The biggest chance was obviously the goal and then the Saka free sort of header from the Martinelli cross. But we peppered their goal a little bit. But we didn't have any huge chances in the first half other than that, unless I'm mistaken. But what's your thoughts on their goal, Neil? Let me know if I'm wrong. I might be missing a chance there. I feel like I am.
What about the Odegaard? Was that the second half?
Was that the one that deflected into the side netting, or was it a different one?
The deflection was second half, wasn't it?
Yes, that was.
Was there not another one where he just shot when he could have passed? There was one in the first, I think. He had an opportunity and he just took a shot and it just went off the defender. That was after a little bit of a good build-up as well.
Yes, I'm pretty sure. I remember that, actually.
Yeah. So there were other chances. There were. Yeah. Not millions, but the point is we still dominated. We were dominating whether we were creating or not. We were in complete control. So, yeah.
But it was frustrating, wasn't it? Yes. So frustrating. But where do you put the blame on the goal? Obviously, Saliba and Raya are the big sort of reactionary. But where do you place the blame on that? Because it was the last few seconds of the half. It was so typical of us. And it was so frustrating to watch. I was seething. But where do you sort of place the blame? What should we have done differently there?
I don't want to place blame. I remember I said to you, let's go for this point. I said, I really don't want to do negatives in this one. I think it was so brilliant. I don't want to do too many negatives, if possible. When I first saw it, I know you and James, especially, and Michael, so you're very good. You've got a good eye. You're quick to see what's happening. And I'm always about 5 steps behind. I was just thinking, I was more filled with disappointment and anger, to be honest. I wasn't looking to blame anyone or what the hell. And then I was trying to look at the replay. And at the time, for me, I thought it was a bit of a 50-50. I thought maybe I thought it was lack of communication between the two, between Ray and Saliba. And I hate blaming Saliba for anything because I think he's just absolutely perfect and he's just the best defender ever since sliced bread. And I don't want to ever blame him for anything. So there were so many biases in my book. And even Rare, I didn't want to blame. So I thought, I'm actually warming to him now. And I'm starting to really like him. And I thought, I don't want to blame anyone. And then it's just, I thought it was just one of those unfortunate moments. But what I was really angry at, Jack, was the fact that it's so typical of us. We dominate games how many times? And this is over the years. This is even when, you know, the Wenger sort of like the falling, you know, going downhill a little bit during his period, where even then we used to dominate games and then it'd be something stupid we would do, some lapse in defence. And, you know, you guys have said it. It's like, it's not as if the opposition are like constantly peppering the goal and you know one's coming. It'll be because down to a stupid defensive mistake or error, or a lack of concentration, just for a moment, that gives them a break. And with that break, it kind of turns the game around completely. And that's what was in the forefront of my mind, that I've not seen a more dominant display from us, especially against Liverpool, for a long, long time. I suppose it was a bit like, you know, the game at Anfield last year, where we dominated them for almost the whole half. And then they got back into the game. We were 2-0 up in that game.
Yes.
And and it reminded me, I thought, we're doing it again. Do you know what? I'm going to say this quickly. Sorry, digressing. The last few times we played Liverpool, I think thankfully things worked out in this game. And it, for me, it justified and it vindicated the fact that I believe we're a better team than them, Jack. I really do. Because over the last few games that we played against them, I think we've been the better team. We've just, whether it's been a mental thing where we've allowed them to come back from 2-0 down, or we've not been clinical with our finishing. But other than that, I think we are the better team. We've outplayed them. And that's consistent over the last few games for me. Now, if I'm wrong, fine, I'm wrong. But that's the way I see it. So that's what was more disappointing. I thought, we've done everything. We've done everything almost perfectly in this half. And when I look back at the replay, I couldn't believe it. I thought actually Diaz actually scored it as a result of the mistake. He didn't. He hit it backwards. The ball was going away from the goal. It hits Gabriel's hand and goes back in. It's like a rebound. So I thought, well, can I blame them? Well, maybe. I think Raya may have been too far away from it. Saliba should have just whacked it out.
Yeah.
You know, just good old-fashioned, I've got the ball at my feet. I mean, there's a danger here. I don't know if Ray is too far away or if he's going to be quick enough to see that I'm trying to shield the ball from the player. He should have just whacked it out. I think he should. That's for me, it would have been the simplest way of dealing with it. But he didn't. And then I think there may have been a lack of communication, but I don't know. The stadium was so loud. You can hear it from the TV. Mm-hmm. I've been there the days where it's just been so loud. And sometimes, you know, do the players actually, can they actually hear each other because of the noise? But I think Saliba actually should have just whacked it out. And Rare was too far to get it. But whoever's at fault, end of the day, it's academic. But it was, I think it was just a really free goal. From what I've seen, you look at the replay, it's crazy that Diaz is actually pushing it away from the goal and it hits his hand. I mean, what are the chances of that? I mean, all right, if then it didn't go in, it would have been given a handball anyway, I would have thought.
Probably that's what I said as well,
So fair play, but weird, but... It was such a shame because I think we all at half time thought they're going to come out now. That's it.
Yeah, well, that's it. Sorry to
no, go.
Yeah, no, that's it. I agree with you. There was a little argument from some people in the stands that said it was so windy that they felt that you know, balls were getting. We'll talk about that with the Van Dijk mistake, that the ball specifically down that end was kind of getting held up on you know, it wasn't running as cleanly. Because when I rewatch it back after a couple of times of rewatching it back, I went, well, what's Saliba's intention here? And I think his intention is to allow it to run through to the goalkeeper. The problem there with that is that there's not really the pace on the ball for it to do that. So I kind of understand why Raya hesitated to a degree. I do agree, though, when it got kind of beyond him, Raya needed to be a bit more assertive one way or the other, and he kind of was stuck in between two minds. So I think that's where he takes a little bit of the blame. But ultimately, I do think it's one where Saliba should just be like, well, no definitive action here, 5 seconds left in the half, just ping it into the stands and reset. They probably don't even take the throw in at that point. But, you know, and that's what's super frustrating. I think, and if you look, it's always easy to tell from the reaction of the players. You could tell Saliba felt, you know, there was no real moment of Saliba going, what were you doing there, Ray? It was like, no, I kind of felt that. So I think Ray, like you said, sorry, had a portion of it, but it did feel like it was a little bit. But again, Saliba was fantastic, and the reaction from him was terrific. And when you look at what the other two centre-backs did on the other side, that, you know, in big games like this, you know, errors do get forced upon, you know, it just happens, really. And that's the way it is. But yeah, what did you feel at halftime? Because it was, felt like a sucker punch to me. It felt very much like this is very predictable here. What's going to happen? I felt I knew I was going to see a different Liverpool in the second half, like we did in the FA Cup game. And I think to a certain degree, we did see that until we adapted and adjusted. And actually, that first 5 minutes, I don't know about you, but that first 5 minutes of the second half, well, I'm sure we were all texting going, Brighton's on the wall here big time. This is a completely different game now, because I think they had, a chance early in the second half. They got right to the edge of our box. I think it was Curtis Jones, maybe, and he just whipped one wide. And it just felt like, okay, that you won't see that all of the first half, and suddenly they were on us in a flash. And it did feel like there was a sort of inevitability about it at that point. I don't want to sound sort of pessimistic or downbeat, but did you feel that a little bit?
I completely agree with that, because I thought, you know, it's just typical. It's what we do. And I wasn't surprised at all that they were going to come out firing. Not so much more from, not just about the drop-off from us and from a mental standpoint after conceding a free goal, but you know that it buoyed them, and you know Klopp would have been delighted to go in at half-time after not having one shot on target, and there's still 1-1. And he must have completely, you can imagine how he was reacting in the, if his celebrations are anything to go by, you can imagine what he was like at the dressing room with his players, right? And he would have just completely, he would have been what the Anfield crowd has done to us in the past in that dressing room. Just give them that lift. You know, you've been outplayed, but look at that. We're back in it, and now we can, you know, we can take them to the cleaners. And that's what it felt like. I think the first 5 to 7, maybe 5 to 10 minutes, they were back in it. They looked like a different team, but mainly because maybe our heads had dropped a little bit. You could see how disappointed Gabriel was. You know, there's a shot of him, and he's like, absolutely, what the hell? He's almost like defeatist. What is that? What have we just done after an awesome display? And it does hurt. It must hurt. It must certainly hurt. All that hard work, and it's like almost for nothing, because you've got nothing to show for it. You're back at, you know, you're back on par. 1-1, 0-0, same thing, isn't it? And but what I liked was, yeah, after those few minutes, I think the fact that they were coming on to us had a little bit to do with the way the teams had set up. We'd gone more compact, hadn't we, on the pitch as well, so that we were allowing them to come down the wings and use and try and spray any chances from out wide, which were basically meaningless anyway. They were not threatening at all, and I think we'd gone very compact. And I like that change, that realization from Arteta that, right, we can't be as gung ho and as dynamic as the first half, because obviously players are going to have a drop of a pace. So I think he changed it to be a little bit more compact. So that probably allowed a little bit more freedom for Liverpool. But I think it was more to do with the fact that they were buoyed. But we seemed to then just stand up mentally, the attitudes changed, you know, the strength of character of the players. And then we got back in it, Jack. It was fantastic.
Yeah, we kind of found it again. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think I remember watching that early part of the second half and just thinking, we need about 20 minutes here to make sure we don't concede again and to sort of find our groove again. And and that's exactly what we did. But just before we get on to sort of how we did that, Zinchenko goes off, another calf injury, which is, you know, the data says that's not a good sign, because he doesn't usually, they're usually 1 month injuries with him, and he just had one as well. So there's obviously a long standing problem here with his calves. So, that's something for the medical team to look at and think about. And we're so thin at fullback anyway. I know Tomiyasu should be coming back, but, Neil, the last time Jacob Kivior played for us was in the FA Cup game against Liverpool, and obviously he scored that own goal. And I think I look back on my tweets, actually, and I said, like, I think it was early December, I said, I said, I think it was when we started Kibior against Luton away and we hauled him off after about 60 minutes when we were 3-2 down, I think. And we ended up winning that game. And I said, it's really, really important that we don't lose Kibior because I don't think he feels like he's part of the group. So I could completely see why Arteta started him. But also hadn't really seen Kibior had a convincing game at left back yet. And when, I have to say, when I saw the substitution and we were 1-1 and knowing we needed a goal and knowing deep down that that can't be a tactical thing, it has to be a force thing. I have to say, I was pretty, I didn't have a lot of confidence, to be honest. But I thought he did really well, Neil. I thought Kibior came on, he did really well. He handled whatever they gave it to him down the right wing and they must have changed out three players in that on that side in the second half from who they initially had to Harvey Elliott to switching players. Nunes was coming over to that side. And I thought maybe, again, like the Havertz thing, where I feel like we found him in the nine, I think maybe we may have found a player there that can do something. Because let's be honest, he's not a left back. It's not an easy role to play in the Arsenal team. It's not a traditional role at all. So we're really trying to teach him this role. And maybe, Neil, maybe we found him because there's no doubt, like I tweeted in early December, I said there is no doubt we're going to need him because there is absolutely no chance Tomiyasu and Zinchenko make it through this Christmas period unscathed. And they've both had about two injuries since then each. So what did you feel about his overall performance? Obviously, he missed a great header as well, we'll get to. But overall, I thought it was a really solid ball. I felt confident when he had the ball. I felt confident when he went into his one-on-ones and his duels. I was quietly impressed.
He looked like a player that's been playing for us for a long time, completely at home and against the most prolific attacking team in the league. That's absolutely. It felt like we hadn't substituted Zinchenko. So I think that's the best way to describe it. Because to be fair, since Zinchenko, the last few games, I think he's coming back to what he used to be, and then now obviously again another injury by the looks of it. But I think Zinchenko has been playing a lot better. And he certainly has been involved again in anything creative that we've been involved in. You know, scoring 10 goals in the last three games, he's been involved in some of that. So, and it didn't look like, for me, that there was a massive change and massive shift in the left-back position. And that's a testament of, I think, how comfortable he was, how confident he probably was in himself. He was involved in not just the potential header, but a number, and by the way, how the hell did he get there? What was he doing there? That was really funny. He was on side of the ball by a mile. I mean, it was
a great move from what I remember.
It was actually a great move.
We split them open with some pass. Yeah, it was a great move. I know, yeah. It was a bit like when Tomiyasu came up against City, wasn't it? It felt a bit like that. Remember when Tomiyasu went running? You went, where are you going? Yeah, and it was a bit like
great. I'm not laughing, but it's great to see. I love it. I'm not trying to, you know, be comic and make it into a comedy, but it was just like, I was just shocked. I thought, what's he doing there?
Well, we've got a bit ahead because that was at 2-1, wasn't it?
Yes, right. He was also provided the assist, didn't he, for Trossard's goal? So
yeah, he's got
the numbers. But aside from that, I thought he was just very comfortable. He was intercepting. He was just handling it down there as if he was at home, like he'd been there for years. And what you said about thickening the squad and finding players, I think we found three in one game. We found Jorginho for sure in the midfield of the engine and playing a pivot with Rice. We found Kibior in case we need him, and it looks like we're going to. I don't know how long. I don't want anyone to feel that Tim is going to be ready, because the last thing we need to do is rush him back and then he has a setback. I think he's got to be really well managed there. And so let's assume he's not available. But now that we think, if on any other day before we saw what Kibior did in that half, we'd be thinking, oh no, Zinchenko again. Oh, it's going to let us thin again, isn't it, at the back? And how's he going to shuffle it? And If Ben White is banned, then Tomiyasu can't take that role. If he's back, he's got to play Ben White's position. What are we going to do? It's like, oh, great. But now, I think he could fill in that role. I think.
Oh, he's going to have to start, isn't he? He's going to have to start in the next game against West Ham.
It's doubly important. So we found him. We found that Jorginho can play in that role and done it so well with Rice. And then, of course, Havertz in that potential, that number nine position. So actually, we found three players. So yes, we didn't make any signings in January, but actually, just with a bit of tweaking and rearranging, I think you're right. We've already thickened the squad. And let's be honest, I think we were all saying before the season kicked off and after all the signings we'd done, I think all of us were pretty much happy with what we'd done in the window. We were more than happy. We were talking about it, weren't we? Timber, Rice, Raya, you know, all and even within those two or three players and signings, we were thinking we're ready now. We've got the additions we wanted. So nothing's changed from that, really. And it's just a way of utilising them, giving us extra options, Jack. But I thought he was great. This game, I think, is significant for so many different reasons, not just for the way we outplayed Liverpool for the whole blooming game, by the way. And I don't know if you know, but we actually outran them by 6 kilometres as well.
Did we? I didn't see the stats on that.
Yeah, by six. And
that's incredible, because they pumped a load of asthma pumps into them at halftime as well. That's so that's incredible.
And Odegaard, did he hit his personal best as well? I think 12. I don't know what it was. Yeah, I think he's in the top. There was a stat with the box, and it's got the top five or six Arsenal. I think Trossard's still top, I think. I can't remember which game it was against. But Odegaard's in the top four, three of them.
Something like that, anyway. Yeah.
It's crazy. The work rate on that man is incredible. And it just goes to show, doesn't it? But yeah, sorry, just going back to it. I think there's been a lot of discoveries made in this game, and all positives. Yeah. All positives, Jack.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And, you know, well, we question, I remember the feeling after the FA Cup game was with, I think, Liverpool 1-0 up, and they brought on a lot of subs and a few youngsters, and everyone was like, we don't. But he really trusted in his squad here. He didn't panic. He trusted in his squad. When someone had a little issue or they looked tired, Martinelli looked tired, took him off straight away. Saka looked a little bit tired. I don't personally love how Saka goes down so easily at times, but the way because he just looked, boom, Nelson straight on. And that's good. That's good. That's showing, in comparison to last season, he's having a little bit more trust within the group, and he's not losing these players as such. I know Smith Rowe didn't feature in this one, but he started the last one. So, you know, he's showing some more faith. I don't think Smith Rowe would have started a game like that at this time last season, put it that way. And so that was really good. But yeah, we found ourselves a little bit after that 5-10 minutes sort of, you know, where they, I wouldn't say that we were under the cosh or anything, but they definitely looked like they were a different attacking threat. We found our play again. And he mentioned that, didn't he, Mikel Arteta? He said, we noticed they'd done something different at halftime. They'd added someone into the midfield. They'd added an extra player or something. And he said, and it took us a second to adjust. And he went, but once we adjusted, we found our rhythm again. And I was like, there's obviously more detail to that, but that was quite interesting for him to sort of talk a little bit on the tactical side of things. But Neil, the goal, the second goal, it's route one. But I think a lot of the credit has to go down to, I know people say, well, look at the error from Alisson and Van Dijk. And I don't know why I got Fabian Barthez Arsenal 3-1 against Man United in 01-02 flashbacks when that second goal happened. I don't know if you must remember where Omri kind of waves at him, taps it on his head, shot over the head. And then Barthez makes a second mistake as well, which Alisson proceeded to do again, kind of thing in this one, and that was also 3-1 that game. I have to say, when I was watching it, I was like, "Wow, this really is kind of making me think of." And it was Barthez obviously was made more errors than Alisson and Van Dijk, but it was kind of uncharacteristic of Man United at that time to make those kind of errors. So it's really interesting. But I think a lot of the credit, I mean, I think it's quite a good ball from Gabriel, but a lot of the credit probably has to go to Martinelli for enforcing that, because he really goes, it's not a foul, but he really goes into Van Dijk, doesn't he? And Van Dijk isn't easy to sway or knock off the ball. But they completely have it's beautiful, Neil. They have a complete mix-up. It's so beautiful. It's lovely to see. Because all I've been receiving all week from Liverpool fans is how Saliba's been dodgy. You know, he's not as good as we think he is. Da, da, da. And in this game, Van Dijk had two screw-ups. Kanyate's got sent off. Alisson's fumbled everything. And I'm like, that's just music to my ears now. But I do think Martinelli deserves maybe more credit than he's getting for creating the opening.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, if he's not there, up there, then it doesn't happen, does it? He's putting himself in the right place. He's giving the defenders a nightmare. He really is. They're aware of, and if you look at Van Dijk's face and his eyes, he's not really looking at the ball. He's more concerned of the positional play of Martinelli. And I think that's because he was rattled by him, absolutely rattled by him. He's more thinking, where is he? I've got to make sure. A little bit like what Saliba was doing. He was shielding the ball from the player. And I think that's what Van Dijk was trying to do. And fully expecting that his goalkeeper is going to collect it. It's very similar in a weird way, although a different mechanic to the Raya and Saliba one. And I think he's expecting his goalkeeper to collect. So he's more worried about, right, I'm going to keep Martinelli away because I know he's just full of pace and he's electric. And if you look at the size difference between them, he's just like, you know, a giant and a small person. If you look at them, there's people saying, oh yeah, but he was fouled or nudged. I'm like, what are you talking about? Look at the size difference between the two of them. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just shoulder to shoulder. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But they can make a complete mess of it. But the point is, I think Martinelli, although the goal was an easy tap in, he still had to be there in that area, in that position, to be able to do it, to make that happen in the first place. And that's what he was doing all game, Jack. Yeah. You know, the 60-odd minutes or 66 minutes, I can't remember when he came off, but the time he was on that pitch, that's exactly what he was doing. He was giving them a nightmare with his pace and his movement and just frightening the defenders. And I think that's what was on Van Dijk's mind. And I think that, more than anything, has put him off from doing what he normally does. What a wonderful, wonderful comical error, though. Because it made me feel better after seeing what we'd done. So it's almost like they cancelled each other out. And I think, all right, we've made a big mistake, but so are they now. And it's in our favour for a change. Loved it. And I think that gave us I think we saw it coming after we settled down again in the second half, but getting the actual goal, because that was always a worry, wasn't it? That we're not clinically in front of goal, but actually to get ahead, then we knew that, right, this is it. This is happening today. Come on, we've got to make sure we don't do anything stupid again. So, brilliant.
Yeah, and I just think Van Dijk's one of those players. I mean, he's a fantastic defender, but he has a little bit of an aura about him where people almost think that, you know, they shouldn't challenge him. Do you know, but that's where the fearlessness from Martinelli comes from. He doesn't care who it is. He's going to push you. We just didn't give him any breathing room. We did not. We enforced a lot of these mistakes. This is another thing that wasn't discussed enough. Our pressing from the front, from the start of the game, was so good. Our turnovers up top were so good. I mean, they do not typically lose balls back there, but we were so, so good in positionally, and Odegaard was really the runner from that at the start. He sets the tone in terms of our press. I thought he was fantastic again. Two big chances created. The Havertz one, which he should put away. The Kiwior header, which he should put away. I mean, I think he's seventh in the league for big chances created this season, but he's only got two assists. A lot of people say, well, he's not getting the numbers. And I'm like, yeah, but in terms of assists, it's really not really on him. He's creating everything we want him to create. Sometimes I feel a little bit, you know, people, if it was Mesut Ozil in his prime when Giroud was up there, we'd be, you know, there'd be compilations of it about how we should be finishing his chances. It doesn't seem to be the way with Odegaard, but I thought he was fantastic again. I think the midfield trio of Rice, Odegaard and Jorginho just absolutely outwitted them. I mean, I know McAllister, he's a good player, McAllister, but some of the ways that Rice took the ball off him, I felt Curtis Jones and whoever else was in the midfield for them, I think it was Gravenberg at one stage, they just weren't in the game for me. They weren't anywhere near us. We absolutely dominated from them from a midfield standpoint. But yeah, when that second goal went in, obviously it was kind of a surprise because you don't expect that mistake, but I did really feel, well, we've got something really to hold on to here. But in fairness, we didn't try to hold on. We kept playing the same way. We kept playing the same manner. We didn't sit deep. We didn't invite pressure on, which we could well have done. And it would have been easy to do because Liverpool knew that even taking away a point there would have been a great result for them in terms of where they're standing in the league. They would have really been happy with that. But no, we kept playing. We made some changes. Like we said, Saka came off. Martinelli came off, looked frustrated, but I like that. You know, he even said at the end of the game, he went, who's happy to come off? But Arteta saw that maybe he'd given so much. And he saw, you know, he, one thing you can say about Trossard is he's so impactful from the bench. He always is. He if he only gets 20 minutes, he gives absolutely everything in those 20 minutes. He brings all the energy. We know he hasn't got the physical attributes, but he's so good. He's so clever. He's so technically clever. And we'll get to that. But what was your thoughts on this? Some arguments about the red card. I think it's a second yellow. It's a red card for sure. Some arguments that Gabriel maybe got a little bit lucky on Nunes. I have to rewatch it because I don't recall the first booking on Gabriel. But from throughout the game, whilst I don't think the ref was particularly bad, I do feel once again, especially early on, that it was far easier for us to get bookings than it was for them to get bookings. And I felt this at Anfield too. But I remember watching it. I think we got 6 bookings there too, but we both made the same amount of fouls. And I don't think this was a particularly dirty game, but it was a sending off on Kanyai, right? There was no sort of question about that, really. I mean, he kind of closed him off. Havertz maybe made a little bit of a meal of it, but I thought it was a second yellow. I didn't really think there was anything to complain about, did you?
No, it was a sending off. I mean, end of the day, he was on a yellow and there was no choice. Even the pundits, as rubbish as they've been, even they admitted that. Normally they would find any excuse to go against what any decision that goes our way. They'll try and you know, counter it. But no, they said no. They were debating that the first tackle that he made probably was harsh, but I didn't think so. I thought they were both yellows. I'm not trying to be biased. I just think that because we would get yellows for less. So, you know, for once, it's gone in our favour in that respect. I'm never surprised from what you just said earlier that, you know, it always looks like we're going to get the bookings quicker and more frequently than the opposition teams. But in for the wrong reasons, Jack, I've got used to that. I really have. I don't expect anything else anymore. I always go into all these games I think we're playing against 12 men. Always do. And I'm never surprised, you know, when you guys put on, I'm like, are you surprised? I always say, are you surprised? It just happens to us all the blimming time. And all right, this wasn't too bad, this game, like you said, it wasn't referee too bad. But for me, I thought they were both yellows, and especially in the second one, he completely just blocked him, didn't he? He just got in his way, and he stopped a potential move forward. And I think, was that the pass that Saka made that I was thinking of? Was that before he went off? Or has Saka already gone off from there? But I don't know. Anyway, Havertz collecting. That's what he was doing. He was getting in those positions to move forward. And he was also in a defensive position. So I think this is where Havertz is useful and his strength is useful. He's a target man, essentially. Let's get the ball to him. Let him create something. And let's not forget, he's the one that assisted Martinelli for the City goal as well. I forgot that. I just remember that now. It was Tomiyasu who did a lot of the work, but it was actually Havertz that laid it off to Martinelli that created the goal. So I think Havertz in that position is great. And I think that was definitely a yellow, second yellow. I'm glad that he got it. But you know what? I will say this. There might be an argument against it because, you know, the way Trossard scored that third goal. But I don't think it would have made any difference if he stayed on. We were that good.
Yeah.
We were that dominant, Jack. They could have had 13 men on the pitch. I don't think it would have made any difference. I'm not just saying that because it's happened and we won now. And it's easy to say with hindsight, but I really believe even if he hadn't gone off, I think we still would have done all right. And I still think we would have got the third goal, in my opinion. But
yeah. What were your thoughts on the third goal? It was fantastic from Trossard, wasn't it?
I mean, Kiwior, I guess I should mention, is obviously laid it off to him. I mean,
same amount of assists as McAllister, by the way, Kiwior this season, just let you know. Same amount of assists as Alex McAllister. So.
Oh, and by the way, you know, as good as a player as he is, it's the way we set up. We completely nullified him. We nullified him. I didn't. The way we played, Jack. Just quick to digress. I didn't. There was about 3 or 4 Liverpool players I could say that I didn't think they were even in the game. Didn't even think they were on the pitch because we completely nullified their threats. It was so well done. I have to take my hat off to Arteta. It was a wonderful technical success. And for a change, our Klopp has been completely outdone. And I'm and you know, he was saying in the post-game interview that, oh yeah, we didn't play well. No, hang on a minute. It's not about you didn't play well. You weren't allowed to play well. Just change that, add that one word. You weren't allowed to play well. That's why. Because we were so damn good. And this is where, you know, we got angry with the pundits. That they weren't focusing on this. They were focusing on Salah being missing. Forget the fact that we've had players missing for the last 20 years. When is the last time we had a full-strength squad to choose from? probably happened once or twice, I think, in so many years, Jack. But no one focuses on that. But they'll focus on Salah being missing, for God's sakes.
Yeah. What about Arsenal? That's what Carragher said, didn't he? He said, oh, Liverpool. That's why I tweeted what I tweeted. Obviously, I was baiting Liverpool fans. Of course I am. It's what I do. Yeah. But that's why I tweeted what I tweeted about. We had a lot of influential players out. I mean, Partey and Jesus were the biggest part of the reason we were top of the league last season. Losinchenko at halftime, another huge component. Tomiyasu is a starter in games like this. We all know that. Saka coming off. So they'll go, oh, compared to Salah. I'm like, okay, well, you know, that's a huge player for you, but for us, these are huge players too. Sure. So yeah, I'm like, there really wasn't anything to talk about in terms of players missing. It was both sides were missing key players, and my point on a tweet was basically making sure that narrative wasn't getting pushed, because I knew it was going to be, you know, all of this, that, and the other. But I was like, no, I'm not having that. I'm sorry, that's just ridiculous. But yeah, I was great to see Trossard do that little.
Oh,
I don't like Harvey Elliott at all. He's a little
sliding player, isn't he? It's counter number 19, isn't it? I think Harvey Elliott's 19. Yeah, he was.
He
is. And then he just absolutely left him for dust. I love that. Left him for dust. And then, you know, he just ran again, his pace. We often talk about that. He hasn't got the pace of Martin. Of course, he hasn't. But he just knew what he wanted to do. It was a solo goal at the end of the day. It was a solo goal. And you know, that's what he brings to the table. He's very progressive. He's dynamic. You know, even if players are told that you don't do this, you don't do that by Arteta, he's one of the ones where you know that when he gets on that pitch, he's just going to go for it. He's going to be progressive. He's going to run with the ball. He's going to be forward-thinking. Without hesitation, he was already there by the net. And what I loved about it was, of course, you know, it's Van Dijk again. But there's that picture of him scoring the same. So if you look at them, they're identical. Even Van Dijk's position and his position when he's making the shot, they're executing the shot, are identical. He's just in a Brighton shirt and an Arsenal shirt. Someone tweeted it and I was like, wow, that is ridiculous. What's the chances of that happening? It's 1 in a million with both the defender and the attacker in exactly the same pose. It's incredible. Van Dijk again, beautiful. Twice now in one game.
Yeah,
absolutely
brilliant.
Fantastic. Lovely to see that. And, you know, it was a great finish. And, you know, he did get credited, didn't he, with the goal? I'm sure he did.
I've not seen anything now, because it does look like it may be sneaking wide. But again, usually those should still get given to him, because it's very difficult to prove that.
Yeah.
It wasn't obvious. So I've not seen anything.
Well, from the Premier League. Quite right. So Gabriel was given that second goal, wasn't he, in the end? So even if there is, I think it's a Trossard goal, but whatever, it doesn't matter. It made it 3-1, and that was it. It was job done. And I think he's such a great person. I wasn't worried, you know, I wasn't upset. Martinelli had played literally a flawless game, but I wasn't upset because I love Trossard as well, and I know what he could bring to the table. So I wasn't too disappointed when he made that substitution, Jack. And you know, again, easy to say with hindsight, but you know, it was productive. It was the right call. And you know what? Let's just give a little shout out to Nelson as well, because I don't think he did badly when he came on.
No, he
came
on the center.
He was involved in they had one kind of attack, and he just got involved and he intercepted it and he passed it. And again, progressive pass forward. I remember that one thing that he did that stood out from the back. But I thought he was all right. And what you said earlier about the trust, the fact that he did choose him over Saka after 70 odd minutes or whatever it was, and he's gone with Kiwior. I mean, all right, maybe that was a bit of a forced decision, but however, he's done that. And Emma Smith Rowe got a start the other day. Maybe it's starting to happen now. You know, looking at maybe what Klopp does with his youngsters, this could be the way forward when we need them. I think, you know, if we'd still been in the FA Cup or League Cup, we would have seen more of them. It's just unfortunate that we've been knocked out of both those competitions. But it's good to see that they're getting some chances. And with the Champions League now on the horizon, he's going to have to, Jack. We can't play at these levels on both those competitions, because let's be honest, we're in the thick of it now again for the title chase. So we're going to have to, you know, keep the momentum up and keep our best players as we can. But we also, so far, have done very well in the Champions League. We dominated the group and we haven't got a bad tie. I mean, look, I'm not going to go ahead and think we're going to win that. You can never be certain, but it's a good tie and there's every chance we'll progress. So we've got to make use of the squad as much as we can. But what a result, man. what a result.
Fantastic. But when that third one went in, it was, I mean, we all felt it, and we all felt this sense of, oh, wow, that's, you know, that's it now. That they're not coming back from that. They barely had a shot on target at that point. 10 men, you knew it was kind of done at that point. You could enjoy the last sort of, and, you know, it's not often you can enjoy moments in these games until they're over. So, but yeah, it was great. It was direct from Trossard. He saw he didn't really have any options. No one grip was catching him. And he, you know, if you don't shoot, you don't score. And sometimes I feel like we should do that a little bit more, is sort of take the shot off rather than looking for the perfect opportunity. Because you don't know what's going to happen. And it obviously gets a little bit of a deflection, but it's fantastic from Trossard. And he makes the impact that he wants to when he comes off the bench. That's 7 goals, 2 assists for Trossard in just over 1,000 minutes this season. I mean, his goal per game or his goal assist per game ratio, I think, is the best out of all of our front players. And last season it was pretty flipping good as well. So, I mean, he's a really, you can't really ask much more from him. He's the exact type of impact player you want. Do I ever think he will be a permanent starter in the Arsenal team? Not necessarily, but he's still really, really valuable squad member. And I think, you know, he's on right at the play. Now we're looking to buy players that are, you know, going to be starters. But Jorginho, they have real value, I think, in the squad. And they're going to be huge, especially, like you said, when 2 games a week come up. Really, really big. But yeah, overall fantastic. I just want to talk about a couple of players before we're done. I mean, all the centre-backs get talked about in these games, right? Many people say these are the best, sort of 3 of the best 4 centre-backs, but probably this one standout one that didn't make an error in the game. I know he scored an own goal, but it didn't really. Was Gabriel. I thought he was fantastic, you know, in the game. He doesn't really get the plaudits that the other 3 get, the Saliba and Van Dijk and Kanyati get. I thought he was really good. He's such a warrior, Gabriel. He wins everything. It doesn't matter who comes on. Nunez, Gakpo again. We've played Gakpo 2 or 3 times this season. He had 24 touches in this game. I mean, he's non-existent when. And what was great as well from our centre-backs was Jota is always a 4 in our side. But again, I felt like Jota wasn't in the game at all. Did you recognise Diogo Jota? Didn't recognise him at all. And the amount of times he's come to the Emirates or it's been at Anfield and he's been the difference maker. And in this game, I mean, he barely had a kick. I'm having a little quick look now, but yeah, he had 37 touches, but I didn't really recognise much at all from him. So that was really fantastic. And I thought Ben White was really good. I was very frustrated with his booking. I felt we were taking a little bit too long on the throw-ins. I don't think it's time-wasting. It's tactical. We know it's not time-wasting. My frustration is I know the other way around. The ref's not giving that. Because at 1-1, Alisson's time-wasting quite a lot with the ball at his feet. And he doesn't do anything. He doesn't warn him. He doesn't do anything. But I do think we were taking too much time on the throw-ins. And I'm not really sure of the tactic there. I get it for corners. It makes sense, you know, trying to make sure you unsettle them and stuff like that. I'm not really sure of the tactic for every throw-in waiting 20-30 seconds.
I saw it coming, Jack. I mean, there was 3.
Did, yeah.
3 of them, I thought, oh no, he's going to get booked, he's going to get booked. And then he did it with the free kick, and then I thought, to be honest, sorry, coming. I wasn't surprised. I was annoyed, but I wasn't surprised.
Yeah. No, I'm the same. I think a bit weird.
It was. And then talking about Gabriel, I just think he's the perfect force for Saliba. They're so different, but they work so well together. Gabriel wears his heart on his sleeve. You can see it the way he's always emotional with his face. He's always, you know, it's just the perfect fall for Saliba. I think I've likened them again in the previous pod, where I used to love watching Vieira and Petit play. They were so perfectly attuned for each other. You know, separately they were different, but, you know, as together as a pair, they were perfect. They would mop up each other after each other. If one made a mistake, the other one would be there. I see the same thing in Saliba and Gabriel. Gabriel and Saliba are just the perfect defensive pairing. I'm still going to say that they're the best in the Prem together. I don't think there's a better defensive pairing. You know, we can talk about Liverpool, etc., but I think they're just magnificent. And it does go unrecognised, I think, what Gabriel does. But I don't mind that. He's out of the spotlight. He's out of the radar. It reminds me a little bit of what Gilberto used to do for us. He was magnificent. I think people never really realised how good he was because he was coming off the back of such an amazing side. We were the impeccable side that we were full of stars, superstars, in fact. And he was this player that came in and we're like, oh, okay, who's he? But when you look at what he's done, if you look at some reels and you see what he was doing, he was magnificent. And I think that's how I like it because Gabriel's not really getting the spotlight, as you said. You know, you've got other players that are more so. but it's good. Let it be the like almost the unsung hero. And I thought Wyatt was good. I thought Wyatt played made some good contributions. He was putting. I think he's getting back to his old self again as well. Wyatt's another one. I'm sorry I didn't mention him earlier, but I've last couple of games he's starting to get more involved again. And he was devastating with Saka and Odegaard in those triangles last season. I want to see a bit more of that actually, but I think he's starting to come back to that. And I don't think he did much wrong apart from obviously the stupid booking. I don't think he did put a foot wrong, really. I don't think anyone did, apart from our goal, which is a bit calamitous, but there wasn't much else. And like you said, Jota, that's what I was saying earlier. There's three or four Liverpool players. I didn't even think about them being on the pitch because we were so good at what we were doing. Yeah. That sums it up.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I agree. And I thought they were both good. Frustrated because obviously we're going to lose Ben White for the next game and we're very short of fullback. So we've lost Ben White and we've lost Zinchenko probably for the next game against West Ham. And they are obviously very dangerous on the wings and, you know, caused us trouble already this season because they beat us in the cup and beat us at home as well. So it's going to be a tough one. You know, you're going to have Kivior up against Kudus and things like that. And hopefully Tomiyasu's fit and back to come in at right back because I don't see another option. We're going to have to play both of them. So that's going to be a very big change to the back four. You don't usually want to make too many changes back there, but that's going to be a big change to the back four. But I don't see how we've got any other choice, but we'll see as it comes closer to that game. But yeah, Neil, ultimately, just a perfect, perfect performance, really. Perfect performance, perfect win. Doesn't mean necessarily anything, but we're definitely, like you said, you're back in the thick of it. It's exactly what we couldn't have asked for anymore since we've returned from the break. And now we have to go from here. But we don't, not touching on the game too much, but what's your predictions? We've got West Ham on Sunday, 2 p.m. kickoff. Away, hard game. We know what they're like. They've got some really good players, West Ham, and they've been a difficult team for us to go up against this season. We've struggled. So what's your thoughts? We're obviously going to have to make some changes as well. Squad is looking a little bit thin, right? Jesus is probably still going to be out. Zinchenko, like I said, Tomiyasu hopefully back. What's your thoughts? What's your score prediction?
I think we go with how this game went with the players we've got. Obviously, Kiwi's got to play. I can't see Zinchenko being back for that. If he isn't, great. But let's assume he's not. So Kiwi goes there. I think Tomiyasu, if he is back, isn't he? Or he's not back. I don't know when he's back.
Tomiyasu, the report at the end of the game was one, he's imminently signing a new contract, which is great. Uh-huh. But the other thing is, he should be back. He went out of the tournament on Saturday. I can't see any reason why he wouldn't be back in training by, latest Tuesday.
Mate, he'll fill in for Wyatt for sure. Then if Wyatt is banned or suspended for that game, he'll fill in. He was slotting. That's what we got him for in the first place. When we signed him, he literally jumped off the plane and ran straight on the pitch.
So yeah, you remember that?
He doesn't do jet lag. He's not made that way. So I can fully expect to see him. But apart from that, I think we go with pretty much the same as it was for the substitutions, to be honest. And we owe West Ham one, Jack. We owe them.
Yeah.
We've not had a good season with them so far. I know it's away. It's always going to be a little bit harder. But our away, we tend to be all right away on the majority of the times. We've improved. The last two seasons, we've definitely improved our record away from home. And I fully expect us to... I actually think we will win. I think the momentum after that game... And the last three games, forget just the last game. I think the momentum is with us. I think the players have sensed something again. And what I love about this, Jack, is one thing I didn't even realise until just now, the way we have won this game against Liverpool, I think we did it a little bit earlier in the season, last season, weren't we? We played them at home.
Yes, we played them first.
Right, yeah, 32, exactly. Yeah. But now we're doing it more later, more of the more important stage of the season to give us that burst of momentum. I think the pacing this season is different with us. We started so quick off the bat last season and then we kind of fell away. I think we haven't started as fast this season and now hopefully the spike will go in our favour, will go upwards rather than downwards. So I think we'll win. And I think we'll win. I'm going for 2-0. 2-0 to us. 2-0 to us, and I actually want him to bag a goal, although he's not clinical. I'm going to say Havertz 2-0.
Nice. I think he'll start. No, I don't think even if Jesus is back, I think he'll start Havertz at nine. I think he probably has earned the start, to be honest. So, and I think even if he's back, I think it seems like something's going to have to be managed. So it strikes me as Havertz is now the alternate option. Which again, in the summer, my argument when we bought Havertz was if we brought him in as an alternate nine option, which clearly wasn't the initial intention because that's not what we played him as. But we would have the ability to sell Balogun and Eddie and basically cut up but break even, because I think we would have probably broken even on that. We got, what, 35 million for Balogun. I think you should have assumed we would have got maybe 25, 30 for Eddie at that point, and we would have, you know, broken even with Havertz coming in. I said that was actually a really intelligent way of using money. But of course, he forgot the part of selling Eddie again, and he's still here. So that's the frustrating part. But I do think, crazy enough, I mean, it's good to have players in the squad, but I think he's one that surplused the requirements, Eddie, to be honest. And you saw, you know, he didn't come on at all in this game, Eddie. I know we might use him, and we've used him a fair amount this season, but the travesty is that Eddie's probably played, I think he's only played 100 minutes less than Gabriel Jesus this season. And that's what I think needs to change. If it's not going to be Gabriel Jesus, then just shift Havertz up there, because the signs suggest that our real difference makers play pretty well when we're moving Havertz up there. And the evidence isn't really there with Eddie Nketiah. He started against Fulham away, right? I mean, the evidence suggests he doesn't really have those connections and those link-ups. So I think, yeah, I like that. I'd love to go, oh man, I'd love that result. But I think it's going to be a really tough one. But hopefully we can, you know, we've obviously drew there last season when things fell away and stuff like that. So I'll go 2-1 Arsenal, and I'll go Odegaard. First goal scorer. Yeah, you could do with getting a goal, I think. But going to be a massive weekend again, mate. Fingers crossed. But got to enjoy this one a little bit. I'm waiting for the bench cam to come out. I'm hoping we do a full 90 minutes on bench cam, and I'm going to put the day off work for it if we do that. So if we do a full 90 minutes, I want Arteta and Klopp, and I want it sort of back and forth, you know.
Most Arsenal fans, Jack, live for the Arsenal Tottenham game every season. I think for you it's Liverpool. Always has been, ever since I've known you, you love it. I know you love it.
Big time. Well, we've had it pretty tough against them in recent years. We had it obviously great early on, but in recent years they've really sort of handed it to us. But I think we're unbeaten in the last 2 years in the Premier League against them. So
we are.
And I think we're a little bit hard done by one or two of those, to be honest. So we definitely the head to head so far this season. I think if you look at the traditional big six, we're top of the leaderboard in the head-to-heads.
I think we are.
I think we've won three and drawn three. Obviously, that disregards Newcastle finishing the top six last season and da-da-da-da-da. But if you look at the traditional big six, we've won three and drawn three. And obviously, we've got a couple of big away ones to go to. But that's really good. I mean, if you look at...
Well, we used to be bottom. How many years we were bottom? We could never beat the top fours in so-called top four. Remember, before it became the top six, we could never beat. We hadn't through such a bad spell, didn't we? We couldn't even get a win.
Yeah,
you got one draw now and again, maybe against Chelsea, the odd draw in there. Man United used to thump us, Liverpool, Chelsea, all of them used to thump us. Ridiculous.
And Arteta, he's really learned how to set us up for the big ones, isn't he? Really.
Mm.
And I think that's a really good sign, with hopefully some big ones still to come. But yeah, I think it's a really good sign. But fantastic, Neil. Fantastic win for Arsenal. We should enjoy it. Enjoy all the little clips. Arsenal clearly lapping it up on the old Twitter feeds with the little post-game, you know, celebrations and little things like that. Do it. Because like Ian Wright said, you know, you
celebrate more
these parts. I thought, yeah, exactly. Enjoy it. You've got to enjoy these parts of games. It's not over the top. Other teams do it just as much. So yeah, definitely enjoy it. Absolutely. But Neil, we're at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter. Type in Purely Arsenal to YouTube and subscribe to us there. You'll get the podcast a little bit earlier, and we'll be back hopefully after a win away at West Ham. But up the Arsenal, keep the faith. Anything is possible. Come on, you Gooners.